Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Two Chairs No Waiting, number 150, The Road to Matlock. Two Chairs No Waiting is brought to you each week by Weaver's Department Store at weaversdepartmentstore.com. Drop by over at Weaver's, pick some great Mayberry items. They've got them all over the place there. Just go and browse the store. All right, you can't handle it if you're a Mayberry fan. You want one of everything. So drop by over there and check it out. Two Chairs No Waiting is also brought to you by donations from listeners like you. I want to thank you all for your support. And again, thank the Mayberry Band for their wonderful rendition of our theme song. So we want to thank them for that. Hello, everybody. I'm your host, Alan Newsom, for Two Chairs No Waiting and your Mayberry podcast. I just want to thank you for taking some time out of your schedule to visit me here. I'm a little excited, a little hyper, because this episode is episode number 150. Wow, it's a milestone. You know, I don't know, the round number thing. You know, I don't know why. The fives and zeros on the ends, you know, the 45, 50, you know, 35, 45, 50. Yeah. Anyway, it's a big, big time here. We got 150 episodes under our belt. That's 150 weeks that I've been doing the podcast. So I'm pretty excited about that. We've got 6 weeks left in this season, this third season of Two Chairs No Waiting, the Andy Griffith Show fan podcast. So episode 156 will be the last one for the third year. So it's big. I'm trying to get something planned good for our 157th episode, which would be the first episode of season four of Two Chairs No Waiting. So I hope you'll stick around and enjoy yourself until then, at least. But, you know, this being the 150th episode, I was trying to come up with something kind of special. Now, this episode was titled, as you heard already, The Road to Matlock. I was trying to find something special that I could share with you that you may have heard, but you may not have, because this what I found was an article from November 1996. It's from an issue of Guidepost magazine. Now, I don't know if you've heard of that or not, but Guidepost is a magazine about it's about Christian living and daily guidance and stuff like that. Let me it's been around for a long time, but now there's a website for it. It's just called guidepost.org. So if you want to go and check it out, you can. But this article was from the 1996 issue of Guidepost magazine, and it was written by Andy Griffith himself. And so I want to share this with you. So let's read this. Now, think of this as Andy Griffith. You know, if I could speak and talk like Andy, it would be wonderful. But Andy wrote this article. It's called Journey to Health by Andy Griffith. He goes, here's where it goes. So I was reading his words. This is Andy himself. So I think you'll enjoy this. Each of us faces pain, no two ways about it. But I firmly believe that in every situation, no matter how difficult, God extends grace greater than the hardship and strength and peace of mind that can lead us to a place higher than we were before. Let me tell you about one of the hardest times in my own life and how I found this to be true. I'd been alone for a long time when I met an extraordinary woman named Cindy Knight. She had come to Manio, North Carolina, to be in a production of The Lost Colony, a summer play in which I had got my start several decades before. Our relationship began as a friendship, but as the months passed, I couldn't help but notice her strong faith and her gentle strength. Did I mention she's also quite beautiful? Somehow, she fell in love with me. 5 years after we met as friends, we became husband and wife. When she married me in April of 1983, I was not at the pinnacle of my career. Ageism is rampant in Hollywood, and although I was only in my mid-50s, work was getting harder and harder to find. Cindy had had frequent and major attacks of sore throat all of her life. So, shortly after our marriage, we returned to Los Angeles and went to see a throat specialist, Dr. Robert Fetter. He determined her sore throats were coming from her tonsils and scheduled an operation. Early the next morning, we drove over to Cedar Sinai's Medical Center, and Dr. Fetter took out her tonsils. While she was recuperating, I got a bad case of the flu. Not exactly the honeymoon of the rich and famous. My illness was strange. As I got better, the symptoms of the influenza were replaced by pain. Terrible, searing pain that ricocheted through my entire body. Cindy and I joked about our invalid status and settled in on Saturday to watch the Kentucky Derby on television. But after the race, when I stood up and took a few steps, I pitched headlong into a nightmare. I was overcome by pain, so encompassing that I couldn't feel my feet. I had no control over them, and I fell to the floor in agony. We couldn't reach any of our doctors that weekend, yet I was so desperate for relief from my pain that I took some of the codeine prescribed for Cindy for her throat. It barely made a difference. On Monday, my doctor met us at a local hospital. There was a room full of doctors attempting to find out what was wrong. For 4 days, they hadn't a clue. Finally, they did a spinal tap. When the results came in, one mystery was solved. I had Guillain-Barré syndrome, a rare form of nerve inflammation. It's thought to be caused by an allergic reaction to a viral infection, such as the flu. The nerves become inflamed and begin to send erroneous and scrambled messages to the brain. Some people, it causes a little pain but extensive paralysis. In cases such as mine, it causes little paralysis but intense pain. There are no drugs or surgery to treat Guillain-Barré, so the doctors sent me home. Quote, "There's nothing we can do about it," he said. "You got to ride it out, and I'll prescribe some pain medication, but use it as little as possible and come back in a week," end quote. By the following week, when I went back, he said the same thing. And the week after that, but my next visit, by the time I went, I was desperate. If anything, the agony was intensifying. Cindy tried not to let me see her fear, but my physical condition was deteriorating noticeably. Up to that point, we had seen every doctor and specialist that I ever had known. Nothing was helping, and the pain had become so consuming that there was nothing else in my life. Then an old friend, Leonard Rosengarten, a psychiatrist, asked if he could come see me. I didn't want my friend to see how bad off I was, so I took my most potent pain medication just before he arrived. The handsome, white-haired Dr. Rosengarten had nearly died from cancer of the esophagus, so he knew a thing or two about pain. He pulled up a chair and sat. He waited until the pain medication wore off and I could no longer hide my agony. Then he went to Cindy and said, "I know Andy. He's a stoic if there ever was one. So if he says he's in this much pain, I know he is. Would you mind if I got involved?" Well, the next morning, true to his word, Dr. Rosengarten got me into Northridge Medical Center in Northridge, California. I was admitted onto an entire floor of people fighting their way back from automobile accidents, strokes, and Guillain-Barré. Here, the specialty was therapy and pain management. I'll never forget that day. The doctor assigned to my case brought along a medication specialist. The first thing the doctor said was, "We know you're in impossible pain. We're here to help you through it. At those words, Cindy said she saw my body relax. Just to have the severity of my condition acknowledged was the first step on my journey to wellness. The druggist was there to start me on as much medication as I needed, but then I would be weaned off of it as I learned to handle the pain in other ways. The doctors at Northridge Hospital knew that treating pain meant treating the whole person, not just the body. Every day, we had classes in biofeedback, which taught us how to use our minds to help control pain. For example, imagine the pain coursing down through your body and out through your toes. It actually releases endorphins that physically fight pain. But even though my pain was gradually diminishing, my foot still felt lifeless. It was slow going as I shuffled along. State of mind is crucial, we were taught. Consequently, we patients were all pulling for one another. I'll never forget looking into the day room one Saturday and seeing a group of stroke patients in a semicircle with a therapist behind each one of them. The patients were passing a ball from one to another. Each time one successfully maneuvered the ball to the next person seated beside them, all the therapists cheered wholeheartedly. There wasn't a bored or blasé staff member among them. It was one of the sweetest and most wonderful scenes I've ever seen. One day, the therapist working on me saw one of my toes move. Well, the whole hospital heard about it. Patient after patient and the doctor after nurse stopped by my door and said, "We heard the great news. Congratulations." I was on the mend. So instead of lying at home isolated with nothing to do but dwell on pain, I suddenly was busy, part of a team, pulling not only for myself, but also for the others on the floor as well. By the time I left the hospital a month later, I was taking 85% less medication than when I arrived. The pain wasn't as severe, and I was equipped to handle it. Although I was no longer in acute phase of my illness, we weren't out of the woods yet. It took me nearly a year to recuperate to the point where I could participate in everyday activities. It was a rough year. My former manager told Cindy and me that we were virtually broke. We thought life would be easier if we moved back home to North Carolina. So we put our Los Angeles house up for sale, but the real estate market was bad and not one good offer was forthcoming. As I fought my way back from Guillain-Barré, I never stopped thanking God for the help he had provided me through Dr. Rosengarten, but especially through Cindy. Yet I couldn't help but feel bad. She had married me for better or for worse, and all she had gotten was for worse. At the end of the year, I sat in our unsold house with no bank account to speak of and no work in sight. Not only was I old by Hollywood standards, but I'd also been out of the game for a year. That alone was hard to overcome. I was getting physically stronger, but I was so depressed. I couldn't sell a house. I didn't know what to do. Then Cindy came up to me with an off-the-wall idea. "Maybe it's a good thing we couldn't sell the house," she said. "Maybe it was God showing us grace. If we moved to North Carolina now, you might indeed never work again. What we need to do is stay here and stoke the fire." Well, that day and every day for quite a while, Cindy and I went over to the William Morris Agency at lunchtime and sat in the lobby. My agent and every agent in the building saw us. Everybody talked to us, invited us to their offices, and some to lunch. The upshot was, I got roles in 4 TV movies that year, including Return to Mayberry with Don Knotts and Ron Howard, and the pilot for Matlock, a show that ended up running for 9 years. During this period, Cindy decided to give up pursuing her own acting career and work with me on mine. I don't know how I would have made it without her. That was more than a decade ago now. Though Matlock is over, I have new feature film, and I've recorded an album of my favorite gospel songs. Ageism hasn't left Hollywood, but I hope I'll continue to work. Guillain-Barré has left me with a permanent pain in both feet. But, like an unwelcome guest, it isn't so bad when I stop paying attention to it. Challenges and pain will come all my life, I know. But with Cindy at my side to remind me to accept God's grace, I go forward and continue to work with love and happiness. All right. I think that's an encouraging story of Andy Griffith, by Andy Griffith. And again, this was from, this is actually an excerpt, this Guidepost Magazine, 1996. It was from volume 51, number 9, issue number 9. So I want to thank them. They gave me permission to use that. It's on our website at imayberry.com. You can go and actually read the story. But I just thought that was a very touching story, just knowing what Andy went through. You've seen him shuffle along at times on Matlock, if you see him, because I never really associate Matlock and Andy Taylor. Matlock is Matlock, and Andy Taylor is Andy Taylor. And one has gray hair and one doesn't. So, but I just thought that was a great story and a fitting way to celebrate our 150th episode of Two Chairs, No Waiting podcast to hear from Andy himself. I just wish I could speak in Andy's voice so that we could have actually heard him saying it. But hopefully you're able to pick up on just some of Andy as I read through that. So, well, folks, I want to thank you for joining me. I want to thank you for being a part of the podcast and being here for our 150th episode. I hope to see you when we go into season 4 as well. I hope you'll stick around and visit with us. I'd love to hear from you. You can call me at 888-684-8415. You can also drop by imayberry.com. Visit things there. You can send me an email at floyd@imayberry.com. You can leave notes over at twochairsnowaiting.com or drop by our Facebook page at facebook.com/twochairs. Love to hear from you in any of those ways, guys. It's a pleasure to get to spend a little bit of time each week with you here in Mayberry, and I just hope you continue to have a good time as well. So, until next week, until the next time you get to turn in the podcast on, we'll see you then. Talk to you later. Bye, guys.